This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Brought to you by Coors Light. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Mills under center, throws, caught, touchdown, Houston, Brandon Cooks. Mills in the gun, here's the snap. Browns bring pressure, Mills is going down. Fumbles the ball, it's picked up, and Cannon has it down at the 28-yard line.
All right, that was the good and the bad of Davis Mills yesterday. His first career touchdown pass to Brandon Cooks on a goal-to-go situation down near the goal line, and then the sack fumble kind of ended the Texans' chances there. They recovered the fumble, but not enough. Davis Mills, first action, rough spot to be in against one of the better teams in the league in Cleveland on the road. Here was David Culley's assessment of Davis Mills after the game.
I thought he did very well when he got in the game. Obviously, he got us a touchdown there. He hadn't had very few reps at all with our first group. I thought he did well, and I expected him to do well. He's been that way all through training camp. Even in preseason games, when he's been in there, you know, we had to pick early. He came back and, you know, did what Davis normally does. He just goes to the next play and, you know, and goes from there.
All right, so that's David Culley on Davis Mills. Seth, thoughts on Davis Mills yesterday?
Okay, there's a danger sometimes when you watch a young quarterback. When you go back and watch, there's a tendency sometimes to say, like, okay, well, let's look at what he did well. And that's good. You want to do look at what he did well. And especially, look, hey, that touchdown pass, which was a great piece of play calling by Tim Kelly. It was great execution by the receiver. Who was the receiver that cleared it out for him? I'm blanking right now.
I'm not sure.
I got to go back this morning.
Yeah, I got to go back and look.
But they ran that little rub route that the Seahawks tried on the goal line that Malcolm Butler intercepted.
Yep.
That was a play that Davis Mills was probably, what, 12 years old when that all happened? Maybe he was watching. Maybe he remembers that play. Maybe he was too busy playing football himself. But that was great execution by all those guys. But sometimes it's good to remind yourself and look at the box score. Oh, 8 of 18 is really bad for a quarterback. But I will make excuses for him because look around the league. Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, various other rookie and young quarterbacks had awful days yesterday. This is what happens. They have awful, awful days. Sometimes because of the precocious quarterbacks that come in and do so well immediately, you forget that, oh, it's not usually like that, especially if you get put on a bad team. So there were some good things that Davis Mills did. There was that touchdown pass. I thought he made the right reads a couple times, even if he was on the wrong page with Brandon Cooks. And there's something to work with there. It's just clear that he's not as good as Tyrod Taylor right now. He's nowhere close to being as good as Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, I'm looking at the touchdown. I'm trying to see who that is that ran that rub route, because that was at a point in the game, Seth, where they were pretty depleted in the receiving corps. There weren't a lot of receivers left. It might have been Chris Conley. I can't really tell. I'm just watching.
I want to say it was Chris Conley.
Yeah, there wasn't much left. I mean, Andre Roberts is out there as your third receiver at that point in the game. Yeah. It was either Conley or Roberts, one of the two. Brandon Cooks.
And that's what people are confirming that. They're saying that it was Conley that cleared the way. Another area to sprinkle a little praise on Tim Kelly. I think that the execution in certain aspects of the game has improved twofold, threefold. And I'll say rub routes, including that one there on the play. Like Conley did exactly what you're supposed to do. He flat out intended to truck that dude. But he made it look like that's exactly where he was going on his route. And there's nothing they can do about it, especially down on the goal line within a yard of the line of scrimmage. It's pretty much a free-for-all anyway. But then also, that screen that early screen, that was so well executed and so wide open in a way that very few Texan screens have been before. Some of that simply comes down to execution. It's not play calling. I know we've complained about Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly's play calling before, and to me it was always more about the fact that they're clearly tipping their hand at various instances, or guys are just way too sloppy in the way they execute it. Whereas that Philip Lindsay screen was just beautifully executed. The offensive linemen that were blocking set it up perfectly. The two guys that went out to the flat did it perfectly. And then he just had an armed escort all the way to the end zone. That was, I'll credit Tim Kelly, David Culley, Pep Hamilton for a lot of that. They've really upped their game in that respect.
Here is center Justin Britt after the game yesterday. He was asked about Tim Kelly, the offensive coordinator, and his play calling. Here's what Justin Britt had to say.
I think TK, Coach Kelly, I think he's doing a really good job, you know, running the offense and coming up with game plans. And we had a really good plan going forward this week, just like last week. We had a good week of practice executing it, and we came out here and, you know, from our first drive, we went out and scored. You know, our confidence is high and our trust in him is high. And I love the way he's calling games. And it's only week two and there's not really panic in us. We know what we got. We believe in ourselves and, you know, it's early in the season. We're going to be all right. This loss hurts, but it doesn't hurt like some of the losses because I saw the fight. I saw the dog in us, the competitiveness. You know, we got to stay healthy and some of that, again, is out of our control. But, you know, we're going to be all right. I have full faith in it.
There's, I think there's something about like Justin Britt, Pharaoh Brown, a few of these guys where somehow, this has been the biggest surprise to me, Sean. The change in the mindset of a large part of the fan base has been drastic just by watching a team go out there and actually scrap and claw and compete. To the point where they've almost just in the course of 2 weeks, I think, become lovable underdogs in a lot of people's eyes. And I'll point to John McClain's Q&A. His question and answer column that he does every Wednesday or Thursday, whenever it is, it's been nothing but 9 months of diatribes by people writing in, and the questions get longer and longer. People write these like 1,000 word questions to John McClain, venting and talking about how much they hate everything, and he usually prints every question. It's not like he edits it for language and stuff.
That's important to point out. That is not like a censored sort of mailbag.
Right. Yeah, he throws them all out there. So I feel like it's actually a pretty good barometer to check the pulse of the fan base.
No
and
doubt.
After week one, I was astounded at how much positivity there was. I think people got so tired of getting beat down for so long that they were just happy to see some life. So when they see Justin Britt, two guys. One, Justin Britt. We've seen nothing but scrappiness out of Justin Britt. David Johnson has been a little bit of a different story. We've seen some moments and some good times out of David Johnson last year. He had some good games and some good things. But I don't think he never looked quite as gritty as he did back in 2016. When he in the second half yesterday churned his legs to get a first down, and Justin Britt came over with the assist to clear the guy off of him to get over the imaginary first down line on the field. And that's the kind of stuff that people take note of. It's a fun atmosphere they have on the team right now.
Yeah, Justin Britt is a guy, you know, I'm going to start to look at this team, Seth, as the year goes on. These one-year guys, like, okay, who are the one-year guys that I want them to come to and say, we want you to be part of this. You know, when this thing really turns around, we want you to be part of it. Justin Britt has rapidly become one of those guys for me that I want to be here for more than just 2021.
Somebody else points out, too, as far as Davis Mills, and I would agree with this. I think there were some things working against him in this. Sorry, my computer just connected to somebody's earphones here. There were some things working against him in the second half. One, there was, when they were backed up in their own end zone, Justin Britt had that holding penalty that – he really probably didn't need to hold in that situation. Yep. When he got sacked, and it wasn't, I almost said he got blindsided. It wasn't. It was to his front side. It was coming from the right side.
How did he not see Delpit coming?
I know. Well, okay. It could have been really dumb, or it might have been one of those things where maybe he was a little too smart for his own good. That was a zone blitz where one of the defensive linemen drops out and the linebacker replaces him. So it's only a four-man rush. It's not a blitz. It's not like a classic corner blitz where the quarterback is responsible for that guy. So that might have been Davis Mills diagnosed the blitz appropriately and saw that it was his own blitz, in which Marcus Cannon should have had that outside rusher.
Yeah, he didn't touch him.
That was not a case where the quarterback was responsible for the outside rusher. That was Marcus Cannon's guy. He didn't do a good job diagnosing the zone blitz. So, I mean, you'd like to think that he still had the peripheral vision to see it. I'd be more worried about it if Mills hasn't shown some aptitude for climbing the pocket, moving around in the pocket. I think he has shown more than a lot of college quarterbacks do. He's shown an awareness and an understanding of the way an NFL pocket works. I'm hoping that was just a matter of him, you know, as rookies do, thinking about eight different things and being so focused downfield that he just kind of got caught in the headlights there and maybe trusted his right tackle to do the right thing.
Yep. All right. Overall, the feeling, I think, about the Texans' makeup is pretty good right now. The injuries are really scaring us for Thursday in this game against the Panthers. How did things go around the rest of the AFC South? Seth Payne nailed his AFC South prediction for the weekend. How did things unfold for the Texans around the league yesterday? On a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light, that is next.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610, brought to you by Coors Light. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Right, so the Texans went into yesterday, so we welcome you back to a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light here on Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Texans went into yesterday, the only 1-0 team in the AFC South. All three other teams in the AFC South lost in the opening week of the season. We know the Texans lost to the Browns yesterday 31-21. Would the AFC South be as accommodating for the Texans in week two as it was in week one? Let's go back and take a look at yesterday's action. Ben, a little mood music. Thank you very much. Let's start in Indianapolis. And we know, by the way, if you listen to this show, you know that as we outlined late last week, all four teams in the AFC South were underdogs this weekend. The Texans were the biggest underdog, but all four teams were underdogs this weekend, beginning with the Colts, who were a 3.5-point underdog to the Los Angeles Rams. In a game that went back and forth, it included a fumbled punt by the Rams that the Colts recovered for a touchdown fairly late in the game. Tied at 24, the Rams kick a field goal, and the Colts, with Jacob Eason at quarterback, and we'll get to that in just a second, Carson Wentz injured again. Jacob Eason trying to engineer a late-game comeback. Here's what happened.
Eason has a shotgun snap. Well protected. Lets it go. Right side. It's picked! Jalen Ramsey at the right sideline secures the Week 2 win for LA.
So there you go, Jalen Ramsey with the pick. The Rams win. So two starting quarterbacks in the division yesterday, Seth, go down with injuries. Tyrod Taylor with the hamstring, and then Carson Wentz got rolled up. His ankle got rolled up in this game against the Rams.
It felt like it was a matter of time before Carson Wentz got injured. Every time I checked in, it seemed like he was getting pressured pretty thoroughly. And look, the Colts offensive line is not I don't know if any offensive line is a strength versus the Rams defensive line, but the Colts offensive line is not a weakness. They let up 26 pressures in that game.
Wow.
Which is damn near every pass.
Yeah.
There were six quarterback hits. You know, it was an onslaught. It took its toll. So Carson Wentz injured. Important thing to watch and monitor for Texans fans. You might think, well, hey, anything bad that happens to my enemy is good, right? Not necessarily, because if Carson Wentz plays a certain percentage of snaps for the Colts this year, then one of the picks that the Colts traded to the Eagles becomes a first-round pick for the Eagles. And the Eagles are a team that's reportedly been interested in Deshaun Watson. We'll see how that goes as Jalen Hurts continues to impress. But supposedly Deshaun doesn't want to go to Philly,
right.
But we'll see how that goes after a year of not playing football. Well, I don't know. I want Carson Wentz to come back and be healthy and just good enough that they don't bench him for somebody else or try to move on elsewhere. Let's just coax this thing along.
In case you're wondering, as a Texan fan, okay, this Carson Wentz ankle injury, is there a point in the near future where the Texans will actually be able to take advantage of this and perhaps win a football game? Week 6 is when the Texans travel to Indianapolis to take on the Colts. So it would have to be a pretty serious ankle sprain for Carson Wentz to miss a month.
And I would take this opportunity to mention something that we haven't talked about yet on the show this morning. This Texans pass rush, it's going to start being an issue if they don't start figuring out a way to put some heat on the pass. Yesterday, if you can get in third and long situations, then hell, Jacob Martin's great. But when you're in all these other situations, the guys that they've got out there that are the hybrid players just aren't getting it done.
Yeah.
They're not getting back there.
Yeah, Baker goes 19 for 21. There was not a pass rush yesterday. Yeah. 19 for 21, Baker Mayfield. All right, so the Colts yesterday, accommodating. They are 0-2. Jacksonville Jaguars, who the Texans beat in week one, they hosted the Denver Broncos. Denver, a 6-point favorite coming into this game. Jags hung in for a little while, but after a while, there was... I can't believe I'm saying this. Too much Teddy Bridgewater.
5 men at the line of scrimmage for Jacksonville. They all rush. Quick throw, right side, pass caught, bam, stepped out of tackle, fair to the end zone, touchdown Broncos!
Yeah, Texan fans know Noah Fant. He rolled up the Texans back in 2019 when those two teams played. Teddy Bridgewater, 328 yards passing yesterday for the Denver Broncos. Seth, Urban Meyer is now 0-2. He's lost as many September games in his first 2 weeks in the NFL as he lost in 7 seasons at Ohio State. He lost 2 September games in 7 seasons at Ohio State. He's lost 2 in 8 days as an NFL head coach.
How do you... Do you think that Urban Meyer had considered that there was a good chance they'd be 0-2? Maybe 0-3, 0-4 to start the season this year?
No, I don't. I think Urban Meyer's a supremely confident person that thought they would go into Houston and roll up the Houston Texans and David Culley.
I was told by somebody that Urban Meyer was very nervous before that Texans game.
Okay.
And not in an embarrassing way or anything. It's not like he was like quaking in the corner crying or anything.
Right.
But I think he knew. I don't know when he figured out what he had gotten himself into. Maybe it was sometime during the preseason. There was some point in August where he realized just what he had gotten himself into. And I don't know. Look, Urban Meyer, yeah, has he quit before? Certainly. But it's always been after he's had a whole lot of success. I think that Urban Meyer, as long as he's still in that climbing phase, is probably going to be just fine because there's something to fight for.
Yeah.
And he's not, he still has that carrot on a stick. It's after he gets the carrot and he's munching the carrot that he starts to say, oh, my sciatica hurts or whatever.
Right. I'm exhausted. I think exhaustion was one of the ones that he was citing at one point.
Teddy Bridgewater was not... Not only did he produce a lot, but he did it while staying very, very safe. Like, I think when you sign Teddy Bridgewater, you always think, like, okay, here's a guy who's not going to push the ball downfield, but at least he won't turn the ball over, yada, yada, yada. He did both. He pushed the ball down the field, but he didn't have a single turnover-worthy play, according to Pro Football Focus. And when he was pressured, he was 9 for 10 with 97 yards and a score when the pass rush actually got home. So I don't know. Man, when a guy has as horrific a knee injury as he did, and when he was still relatively young at the time, I feel like there's almost no accounting for how long it might take him to come genuinely back. And it also helps that the Broncos have a really good defense on the other side. I think that Bridgewater's just playing in just the right spot. What are you laughing at?
I'm looking at Jacksonville's schedule. Like, Urban Meyer might spontaneously combust on the sideline by, like, week 11. Like, I mean, they got Arizona next week, who's 2-0. They go to Cincinnati, I guess winnable, maybe. Then Tennessee, Miami, bye week, Seattle, Buffalo, Indy on the road, San Francisco. They play the Rams still. Holy smokes.
But what is there? This is the thing that's so fascinating about Urban Meyer. Okay, other college coaches who have quit midseason.
Bobby Petrino.
Nobody, we don't have this conversation about coaches. Nobody, we don't talk about anybody like, hey, you think he might quit? Okay, Bobby Petrino quit midseason. Saban quit midseason?
No, Saban quit after the season.
Saban, he quit after the season. Yeah. So is Bobby Petrino the only one who quit midseason.
Yeah, and he's the biggest slime ball on the face of the earth. Like, I would expect him to do that even if he weren't miserable. You know what I mean? Oh, more money? Sure.
Bobby Petrino was in Jacksonville when I was there. He always seemed like a – I always liked that. I hung out with him in the cafeteria. And if Seth Payne's hanging out,
yeah, I was about to say, oh, I changed my mind. So, my bad. 12 years worth of baggage out the window because he had a sandwich with Seth Payne.
Hey, wait a second, though. Hey. Wait.
We got to get.
All right. Okay, who's actually quit? Which college coaches have actually, or which NFL coaches have actually quit their jobs? Petrino, Saban. Maybe, I mean, but this is, it's so strange that we're even having this conversation with Urban.
Yeah. Lou Holtz did back in the day with the Jets after one season. He quit. But text in if you can think of one. 713-572-4610. Seth, I got to sprinkle a little sugar on you here at the end of the segment. You said, when I asked you yesterday, pick one AFC South team to pull off the upset this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Titans going on the road. This is a tall order. They go on the road. They're trailing 30-16 early in the fourth quarter. And the Tennessee Titans are able to battle all the way back on the back of Derrick Henry, who was unbelievable, vintage Derrick Henry yesterday. And in overtime, let's hear the end.
This is a 36-yarder to win it. Young man from Klein, Texas. Snap, set, kick. Got it!
Yes!
How about these Titans?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
The impossible situation, possible.
All right, there you go. That was Randy Bullock who kicked the field goal, by the way.
Kid from Klein, Texas.
Yeah, kid from Klein,
My
Texas.
Aggie.
That's right. Your fellow Aggie, Seth. You cited this stat last week. I thought it was a really good stat. Titans, at the time, 6-0. Now 7-0 since 2019, coming off a loss of double digits in a game.
And usually I'm skeptical of any stat that's about, like, a team historically, because usually it encompasses several coaches, different quarterbacks, all that stuff.
Yep.
But that's been mostly Mike Vrabel with Ryan Tannehill.
Yep.
The one big difference is that Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, is now the head coach of Atlanta. But looking from week one to week two, I just the biggest thing I thought was, okay, look, maybe Ryan Tannehill just had a magical couple seasons and he comes back down to earth a little bit. But you still have Derrick Henry. You still have that offensive line, even though Taylor Lewan got hurt during warmups. And you added Julio Jones. And I don't care what Julio Jones is compared to when he was at his peak. He's still a big freakish athlete that you have to account for that's lining up opposite of A.J. Brown, who was relatively quiet yesterday, by the way. So the Titans are just have too many headaches to account for offensively. That even if the loss of Arthur Smith hurts them, they were one of the best offenses in the league last year. I think they're still going to be a really good offense.
All right, what went right? What went wrong for the Texans yesterday? We are equipping you for the water cooler conversation in your office about the Texans today on a Reaction Monday. That is next.
It's a Reaction Monday from the Twin Peaks Studios on Sports Radio 610. Brought to you by Coors Light. Keeping Texas chill. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, it is a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. We'll get to some headlines here in a few minutes. Let's go through some stuff I liked, stuff that I didn't like, stuff that bugged me. Let's go through a few things that I liked first. This may be a music segment, Ben. We may need a little something underneath here. Let's start. Seth, I would say first half of this game, before Tyrod Taylor went out with the hamstring injury, this is just a general view of the team, kind of the makeup of the team right now. I would say they look like a solid, average NFL team. And for anybody who's going to go, really, you're celebrating and looking average?
Yeah.
I would encourage you to go look at the power rankings before the season and not move the goalposts on us. Average is fine right now compared to where everybody thought they would be. And the biggest thing I like, Seth, Andre Roberts, who I will get to momentarily in the other category of this segment. Andre Roberts fumbling that punt, very Jacoby Jones-like. The team did not flinch at that point. I mean, they gave up a touchdown. The defense did. But they ultimately, in that half, they wound up taking a 14-7 lead. Like, the team showed, I thought, really good resilience from what was about as cataclysmic and unforced error as you could have in a football game on the road.
Look, we knew that the blueprint for this team in a lot of ways was just going to have to be that, all right, you guys are blue-collar veterans, and there's not necessarily going to be a whole lot of magnificence, but maybe you can make fewer mistakes than the other team. And I think, in large part, that's what you saw from the defense yesterday. The breakdowns were honestly... At least partially, like some of them were just physical. I mean, you got waylaid by a really good rushing attack in the second half.
Yeah.
But I'll point to that screen by the rookie from the Browns. It was second and 19 at that point, and the Texans missed at least three tackles. There's another guy that didn't even make contact because he was badly out of position. Like, that was just a breakdown in fundamentals that I expect better of for the Texans.
Yeah.
So when I look at it, I say, hey, look, they were second and 19 at that point. Maybe you hold them to a field goal on that drive. This game could have been even closer with some better fundamentals. The actual cornerbacks, as outmatched as they were in some respects, didn't let up that many passes. This is bend but don't break defense. The pass rush is not great, but for what I expected out of the Texans and what they're delivering, I'm okay with it for now. I mean, they've got this scrappy, lovable underdog vibe to them that makes it fun to watch because they've actually been in these games.
Three catches for 34 yards. That's what the cornerbacks gave up yesterday. Next thing I liked, Laremy Tunsil. This was the matchup that you highlighted late last week and on the pregame show yesterday. Laremy Tunsil versus Myles Garrett. Laremy Tunsil held up really, really well against one of the best defensive players in football. He should. I mean, he's one of the best tackles in football. But it's nice to win that matchup when you've got good on good, really good on really good, to have your guy win the matchup. Only one pressure from Myles Garrett all day long against Laremy Tunsil. And the pass protection overall, I thought, was pretty good considering the talent in that defensive line for the Cleveland Browns.
And a couple people that I'll credit on top of Laremy Tunsil and Marcus Cannon. Marcus Cannon had a bad mistake when Davis Mills got sacked there at the end of the game. That was a zone blitz that Marcus Cannon should have picked up.
Yeah.
But for the most part, a good job. And also, I think Tim Kelly and James Campen put together a really good pass protection package for Myles Garrett. You saw David Johnson chipping him. Other guys, you know, there were a lot of chip blocks on the defensive ends yesterday. So that was schemed very well. And yet you still, when Tyrod Taylor was in there, still had a productive passing game too. You know, sometimes when you're chipping the really good defensive ends, the defensive end is winning because that's one less guy out on a route. So I thought that they struck the right balance between protecting the passer, but also being aggressive in the passing game.
Next thing that I liked, Kamu Grugier-Hill.
Mayfield fakes the give. Mayfield under pressure, and Mayfield's going to be sacked. Kamu Grugier-Hill puts down the quarterback, second and long.
He stuffed the stat sheet yesterday, Seth. I'll be anxious to rewatch the game to see if, you know, what he did in the stat sheet matches kind of what actually his game looked like. But he had 8 tackles, 3 TFLs. He had that sack that you heard just there. He's supposed to be a backup on this team. Kevin Pierre-Lewis is supposed to be the starter, but Kevin Pierre-Lewis can't get on the field. Kamu Grugier-Hill, that matches what he was doing in the preseason. He was flashing quite a bit in the preseason as well.
He is an undersized guy, but who's very, very fast. And he's got a real skill for shooting into the backfield.
Yes.
And making plays. And also, oh, I wrote it in my notes. There was another really big play that I didn't think he really got credit for, and you wouldn't have noticed it. But he's a hustle player, and the one thing you worry about with him is sometimes he gets swallowed up by downfield blocking on run plays. I think that's just the price you pay sometimes. If you got a smaller guy, he's just got to make up for it with some of these. I'd rather have him be responsible for a 5, 6, or 7 yard run here and there if he can make up for it with tackles for a loss and a sack or an interception or whatever. I mean, he's got a certain level of speed that we haven't seen out of a lot of linebackers here.
No doubt. All right, let's get to the stuff that bugged me, and let's start with it started early in the game. Texans get the Browns off of the field defensively. So a little momentum to start the game. You take the crowd out of the game a little bit. You figure you got your Pro Bowl punt returner back there. And then this happens.
Gets it off. Tracking forward. Roberts, he fumbles the ball. A muff punt, and the Browns have it inside the 35-yard line of Houston. A short punt. Roberts on the run. Didn't make the catch. And the Browns have the ball at the Houston 35.
Seth, I never like seeing a punt returner sprint up to catch a short punt into a crowd full of people. Like, that just always feels like something bad's going to... If you catch that, you're probably going to get tattooed by somebody. Like, run up, fair catch the thing, and live to fight another day. I was very surprised by the mistake. I'll say this about Andre Roberts. You're on this team for one reason. I know you were out there playing receiver at the end of the game. That's because everybody's hurt. You're on the team for one reason, and you haven't really done it that well, and it's to return kicks. You cannot be a net negative for this team, man. This team, roster spots are too precarious right now for this team to be carrying a guy who's a specialist who's not doing the one thing he does well right now.
Yeah, and then he followed up on that, too, by returning one out of the end zone.
To the 16-yard line.
You could see he was going to somehow avenge himself by having a miraculous play, returning one out of the end zone. Yeah. So you take what should be an automatic 25-yard line spot and turn it into a – was it the 16-yard line you
16
said?
16-yard line, yes. Yeah. Yeah, he's the guy that lost $100 at blackjack and said, fine, I'm betting $300 on this hand. Let's see how this goes. Oh, bust. Sorry. So Andre Roberts on the list of things that bugged me. Next thing on the list, Mark Ingram ran for 41 yards on 14 carries. Trust me, it is not Mark Ingram that bugs me. I love Mark Ingram, and if you watch the game, if you just looked at the box score, you'd say, well, Mark Ingram, you know, 14 carries, 41 yards. He's 31 years old. What do you expect? This stat blew my mind. I joked around on the post-game show yesterday, Seth, that of Mark Ingram's 41 yards rushing, 39 of them he had a Cleveland Brown on his back. This is the actual stat from Pro Football Focus. Mark Ingram had 41 yards rushing. He had 42 yards after contact. Like, that means on average the dude is getting hit in the backfield on every carry.
Mark Ingram is single-handedly glossing over some of the issues the Texans have right now in the run game, because he is just running his butt off. He is running so hard and breaking so many tackles and driving the pile forward. And a lot of times when I watch Philip Lindsay and I want to make excuses for him because he's getting nabbed in the backfield, I also know that Mark Ingram wouldn't be getting nabbed in the backfield on this. Philip Lindsay takes his time hitting the hole, and he's getting caught by backside pursuers sometimes where he shouldn't be if he would just get to the hole in a hurry, and like Mark Ingram is. So it's partly on the run blocking, not just the offensive line, but the tight ends and as well. They got to clean some things up. It's tough because I see them doing some things really well. When on the plays that are good, I think they're working together well. I think they're driving the guy on the line of scrimmage up into the lap of the linebacker at times. They're doing really well on some of the good plays. But then there are other plays where there's just too many guys unaccounted for, and they're not quite there yet. But I do feel better about it overall. I think that it's going to improve as you get more cohesion here. As Titus Howard gets more and more comfortable, I think they'll be all right.
All right, the last thing here on stuff that really bugged me before we get to headlines, and we're getting a lot of texts about this, and we should touch on this now. David Culley, I think I saw you tweet about this last night, Seth, that other than the weird decision to accept a penalty, or I'm sorry, to decline a penalty and then punt on a third down, other than that, David Culley has largely been satisfactory as a Texans head coach so far. But we can't just gloss over that decision, because there are going to be games where decisions are going to need to be made, and it might end up costing you a game. Let's lay this out here. Real quick.
Okay, yes. Go ahead.
Just to lay out the particulars for those who don't remember the exact situation. Third and 15, Texans at their own 38-yard line early in the second quarter. The Texans throw a short middle pass to Brandon Cooks, who goes for 13 yards, gets it to fourth and two at the Cleveland 49. So you're right about midfield with fourth and short. Oh, wait. The Browns were offsides. So now you have a decision to make. You either accept the penalty, try to get a first down on third and 10 at your own 43, or you decline the penalty and try to get a first down on fourth and short around midfield. Oh, wait. Didn't realize there was a third option, because David Culley chose it. You decline the penalty. You decline the penalty and then punt the football. Back to the Browns. Before we get your assessment on it, Seth, here was David Culley asked about that decision following the game.
We felt like that at that point, that we felt like we could have a chance to be able to get better field position by holding them and out by getting them, and we didn't make it.
No.
We didn't get it.
He wanted to pin them deep, and then, by the way, Cam Johnston punted it into the end zone, and it was a touchdown.
Yeah, that
it was
the cruel irony of it. The cruel irony of it was that you turned down a third and 10. So you could be 9 yards further forward and have, or 8 yards further forward. Was it fourth and one or fourth and two?
Fourth and two on the box score,
So to be 8 yards closer, and then your punter punts it 8 yards into the end zone.
Yeah.
So, it would have been third and 10, if you wanted to play the field position game but still have a chance at a first down, you're going to get a completion for at least 5 yards there because the defense is going to play it. Like, you've got about a 70% chance of making it at least 5 yards in that instance, plus also having the opportunity for a first down. I mean, basically, this is what you have to ask yourself. At any point ever, is it advisable when it's 3rd and 10 at midfield to just go ahead and punt on 3rd down?
Right.
Like, no, it's not. Ever. Something got lost in translation here. I'm convinced of it because this was not a curious decision. This was a decision that didn't make any sense at all.
None.
And I've seen some people vaguely jump in and try to justify it by saying, well, you're playing the field position game. But the field position game doesn't. David Culley just mentioned the punter there. You've got an awesome punter.
Yes!
That extra
yes!
8 yards doesn't do any. That he can pin them down from midfield. It doesn't. He doesn't need the extra 8 yards. So none of it made any sense. I gotta think somehow there is a miscommunication between Culley and Caserio in that there was a plan to go for it on 4th down, but then maybe I don't know. I'd love for there to be some better explanation. I'm not going to be irate about it right now because, frankly, we've got bigger fish to fry. And I want to like David Culley because he's done a good job with this team.
Yeah.
He's done a really good job with this team and he's already exceeded expectations in terms of what some people thought. There are a lot of people that thought the Texans wouldn't compete in a single game this year.
Right.
So he's already far exceeded those expectations. I don't want to be angry about this. And yet I find myself thinking about it nonstop.
Well,
I need something better.
If you want just an anecdotal gauge for how ridiculous the decision was, I got a text from a buddy of mine who was at the game in Cleveland. A buddy of mine who lives in Cleveland who was at the game who hasn't texted me in probably 3 years. And he texted me and said, why is your coach declining the penalty and punting? And oh, by the way, how have you been? You know, like that's how ridiculous the decision was. It prompted my buddy Jim, who I used to work with, to text me from the game asking why David Culley did that. Crazy.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get about it. Sometimes coaches come in. You know, O'Brien used to do this. Now, O'Brien would be very David Culley-like and be angry in the press conference, but then he would come back the next day and he have a pretty reasonable explanation for exactly why he did what he did.
At the very beginning of the press conference, he would do it before he even got asked questions about it. Remember
On Mondays,
like the Gronk thing. Remember when the people wanted him to challenge that Gronkowski catch, I think back in 2018?
He said, it's not my job to help the official do his job.
Not my job, yep. All right, hey, tomorrow is a Texans Ticket Tuesday. We're giving away a pair of Thursday night football tickets to the Texans and the Panthers. Every hour we're giving away the tickets. Should be a fun Thursday night. Should be a very intriguing Thursday night, no doubt about it. Davis Mills first start. Listen tomorrow between 45 and the top of the hour for the cue to call from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And be caller number 5. You'll win a pair of tickets. Plus, you qualify instantly to be upgraded to front row seats in the bullpen. Pretty cool. Your chance to win all day long tomorrow between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. exclusively on a Texans Ticket Tuesday here on Sports Radio 610. Tickets still available, by the way, HoustonTexans.com/tickets.
All right. Real quick before we get to the headlines,
yes.
One more negative that I mentioned a while back, but our very loyal listener, Steve Dent, who's a former college coach, texted in about the tackling in the second half. I mean, that honestly, that was the one part where I feel like, oh, okay, you know what? I am taking this team seriously because I have higher expectations of them. The tackling needs to be sound and secure. If this team's going to surpass expectations, they need to keep doing a lot of the things that they've been doing well, but they're also supposed to be good tacklers. I was bragging on their tackling during the preseason and really the first regular season game. Look, you're facing one of the best rushing teams and two of the best running backs, the best 1-2 punch combo in the league. But look, that screenplay was a rookie who's not one of the best running backs in the league. And you guys were – Eric Murray was trying
atrocious.
To punch the ball out
atrocious.
Instead of securing the tackle. Justin Reed, I love Justin Reed, but he didn't rap at all.
Yep.
He was just trying to go for the hit. Like, they're better than that. However bad they might be, they're better than that, and that's fixable. Oh. So I expect to see that improve.
Eric Murray's angle that he took on Chubb's touchdown to close out the game, like it was. Eric Murray was bad yesterday. He was bad. All right, let's get to the headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, David Culley came into his press conference following the game yesterday, and he immediately touched on the biggest story of this 31-21 loss to the Cleveland Browns.
You know, he's got a hamstring. Not sure how severe it is, but he does have a hamstring, and it was severe enough that he couldn't play in the second half.
All right, so naturally it's a hamstring injury to a Houston athlete because Houston. The Texans are now 7-point underdogs to Carolina on Thursday night. It's funny, Seth, I was watching the game with Clint, you know, as we watch it together, get ready for the post-game show. And Clint actually, when Tyrod Taylor ran in for the touchdown to make it 14-7, Clint said, man, I think Tyrod might have hurt himself on that touchdown. He kind of slowed down at the goal line, and then he was on the bike when they came back from commercial. Culley said he heard it when he was rolling out to his left. He probably aggravated it rolling out to his left, but he definitely heard it on the touchdown run.
That's when, yeah, you could tell that it was really bothering him, because when they were running at the end of the half and they finally decided to, or that second to last series, the series after that, when he scrambled a little bit too, and then ran out of bounds and he looked hobbled. But yeah, a lot of our listeners tweeted at us immediately after that touchdown too, that said that they were worried because he, and I honestly, I was more wrapped up in how weird the whole situation was, that nobody signaled touchdown. It was like nobody was celebrating on the field. Everything felt wrong and weird about that.
Yeah.
I felt like it was the football gods smiting us for David Culley's decision. That it was that they somehow said, all right, listen, we can't let you get away scot-free with that whole 3rd and 10 thing. So and then when he went to a knee, I didn't think anything of it. I was still trying to figure out if it was even a touchdown watching on TV when Tyrod went to a knee. I thought, like, okay, I don't know, he's Tebowing or something, whatever. When I went back and watched it, you could see clear as day, oh, he's going to a knee because he's kind of freaked out about whatever just happened to his hamstring.
Yeah.
And maybe he's praying too, but that whole situation was strange.
Yeah, it's David Culley's press conference is today at 10. You'll be able to hear it, highlights of it, and hear it later on this morning here on Sports Radio 610. It's a big press conference. I want to find out what's up with Tyrod Taylor. What do they know about Tyrod Taylor? We know that Davis Mills is going to get the start on Thursday. I mean, hamstring injuries are tricky, Seth. I mean, I feel like we've got plenty of experience with them here in Houston. And to me, I feel like just looking at other historical hamstring injuries, minimum of a couple weeks, and then could be longer than that. And if you look and it's longer than that, Davis Mills, these next four games, you're going against Carolina, who has 10 sacks through the first 2 weeks, 21 quarterback hits. Then you're going to Buffalo. Not an easy defense to play, obviously. Sean McDermott up there and Leslie Frazier. Then you got Belichick in week 5. Then you got a division road game in Indianapolis in week 6. I mean,
Belichick versus rookie quarterbacks, you say?
Yes. Ask Zach Wilson how that went yesterday. Yeah, exactly, man. By inferno is what that is.
I didn't even have to check the scores. I just kept seeing people make comments about Belichick versus rookie quarterbacks.
Yep.
And there you have it.
Yep. So a lot of people asking questions. What about Deshaun Watson? Are they going to ask Deshaun Watson's not playing for this football team?
Hey, somebody said that the line judge immediately signaled touchdown on that play. I thought that the line judge kind of, like, started to and then stopped himself. He did. Some of these guys are kind of lazy. He almost did, like, a little bit. It looked like Nick Saban at the podium almost. Like, you know, Saban always has his hands up, like, palms facing outward. It was weird.
Tyrod Taylor slowed down like there was a whistle. So I wonder if everybody was looking at each other like a whistle was blown. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and I think that sometimes these officials pull a Joe Buck and kind of hedge their bets.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, you know when Joe Buck's trying to call a home run,
but
he doesn't trust himself because he's Joe Buck?
Yep.
They're like, you got to wait 5 seconds after it goes over.
You're right.
I think that's what that line judge was doing.
It was weird. It was weird, no doubt about that. All right. We continue on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. To baseball, the Astros, they won yesterday 7-6. Just like everybody drew it up on the chalkboard. Jose Siri and Chazzy Mack with back-to-back home runs in the eighth inning. 3 runs in the bottom of the eighth. They get the 7-6 win. But the big story, Seth, my over on 87.5 wins.
There you go, buddy. You're a rich, rich man. You're rich both financially and spiritually.
Yes, yes. We're going to Sizzler
Nothing
tonight.
Cleanses the soul like a well-placed over bet on a season in which people are acting like somehow cheating in 2017 is gonna have you only win 87 games this year.
Called it inefficiency in the market. Are we worried about Zach Greinke, who gave up a bunch more runs in very few innings? I think 5 earned runs in 3 innings yesterday. Greinke has now allowed 21 runs in 19 innings over his last 4 starts.
Yeah. I live my life perpetually in fear of Zach Greinke these days.
Okay.
And I don't know what to tell you. It's going to make for more fun. Oh, boy. Think about a series versus the White Sox where we have these questions about Greinke, Odorizzi. We have two managers who perhaps their sharpest years are behind them. We'll say, although Dusty deserves a lot of credit for something that people were lambasting him for on Friday night. In this 3-game series versus the damn Diamondbacks, where every damn game had to come down to the wire somehow against one of the worst teams in baseball, people were wondering, like, how the hell did you substitute Chaz McCormick for Kyle Tucker? And it made perfect sense. Chaz McCormick went in as the runner on second base in extra innings because Kyle Tucker wasn't going to get a chance to bat until the 11th inning, and you had to have a catcher in the game. So it worked out really well. And Dusty Baker did some great small ball management at the end of a game in extra innings to get a win over the incredibly bad Arizona Diamondbacks.
How about the play on Saturday where Yuli tagged up too early from third base,
yep,
and they were going to appeal, and everybody knew he tagged up too early. And as the Diamondbacks went to appeal at third base, Kyle Tucker decides to, who had occupied third base on that play, decided to steal home, and they tag him out. And they said, well, now you can't appeal the Yuli tag up because that's 2 plays ago. Sorry.
It was a really heads-up play by Kyle Tucker and the Astros, and nobody in the ballpark would have figured it out other than, like, the ones that knew, I guess some people are smart and figure it out on their own. But for the most part, I would guess the vast majority of people, because baseball has this asinine policy where they don't explain things in-game because they want to make the in-game experience as miserable. What should be the best in-game experience in sports, they somehow try to make worse.
Right.
So anyway, they wouldn't have figured it out. But then, Sean, Kyle Tucker goes and has a boneheaded base running error yesterday in the game.
Oh, I didn't see that.
This Astros team is trying to, they are messing with you.
They're trolls.
They're messing with you to the nth degree. Yeah.
They're trolls. All right, so the Astros take 2 out of 3 over the weekend. They are comfortably in the lead in the AL West, and they will continue to try to get that home field over the White Sox in the divisional series. All right. We had more stuff we had to get to, Seth, but we got more meat on the bone for tomorrow. It was a good Sunday night game last night between the Chiefs and the Ravens. Those teams are both now 1-1. Texans are here they are, and they're tied with the Chiefs and the Ravens. They're basically as good as the Chiefs and the Ravens, who are both 1-1 right now in the AFC. All right, so there are your headlines. All right.
Somebody says that as of today, Davis Mills is the worst performing quarterback in Texans history. I would have to fact check that. It might be based on one really bad. If you don't have, usually when you talk about these things, you have a minimum number of snaps played.
Yep.
There's been some pretty bad one-offs, but usually guys have at least a few chances to make it up.
Seth, antibodies on a reaction Monday to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you. Oh, and that ref did give the touchdown signal.
Okay.
I went back and rewatched it. Thank you, listeners, for alerting me to that.
Thank you. All right, we're done. Mark Vandermeer, John Harris, they're up next. In the Loop after that. Clint Sterner in the show after that. We got you all day long here on A Reaction Monday. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m., everybody.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week 1? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.